Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smirch Pod Royale.
Yesterday is a memory. Today is history. Tomorrow is in the hands of one man.
Bond. You know the rest.
Tomorrow never dies. Now shooting around the world.
Hello and welcome to Smash Pod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain. This week we'll be seeing if fake news and stealth technology could bring about the start of World War III. Yes, it's Tomorrow Never Dies. And joining me for a night in Paris is professional Welshman Dan Thomas.
Hello everyone!
Hello Dan, it's nice to have you back.
It's always a pleasure to be here. It's an excuse to drink.
Yes. Yes, which we are doing.
Yeah, good. Yeah. What have you got?
I've got a bottle of wine.
I've got the remains of a bottle of whiskey.
Oh,
I'm not sure it's going to make it through the show.
Oh, we'll have to try, won't we? It's the lockdown prerogative that you have to drink while you record.
Yeah. I've got another bottle of whiskey ready to go, don't worry.
Oh, good. It's why the ultimate trick for lockdown is when you get to the other end, you are going to die of alcohol poisoning.
The ironic thing... No, we'll end up dying of not having it anymore. Your body is just become accustomed to it.
Hmm, yeah.
What the hell is this guy drinking? Distilled water? Fucking dead.
That's the joke Paul Litchfield always makes, that Sid James died because he accidentally drank a glass of water. So, Tomorrow Never Dies... What was your opinion of Tomorrow Never Dies?
When I first saw it in 1997, I liked it because I was not, as I think I've said to you before, I wasn't fussed on GoldenEye because I thought Brosnan didn't really look like Bond and I didn't like the music and it just didn't feel like Bond. He looks like someone from Dollar with his big hair in the first one.
I kind of like the big hair in the first one, the Prince Charming haircut.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense because the first thing he does is jump off that dam. So I suppose that would give you a Bouffant effect, wouldn't it? It just lasts for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was so used to Connery and the other one more, that he's a very different Bond, even more than Dalton, really.
Hmm.
So I wasn't fast on that. So when this came out and I felt he physically looked more like a Bond I had in my head, and the score is better. And I mean, looking back at it, these are the only two things that are better about this film.
Yeah,
but I'm not a fan of it. I saw this film again 10 years ago, and I thought, oh, it's not as good as I remember. And then I watched it this week, and I go, oh, this is actually shite.
Well, I'm the other end to use that. I liked GoldenEye when it came out, and then when this came out, I wasn't that fussed about it. I thought it was fine. I think it was very, very flawed, but it had a bit of charm about it. But I've since come to sort of reconcile with the fact that it's good, but it's not amazing. It's got some really good elements in it.
It feels older than GoldenEye. It feels like one of the 80s ones. What they've done is it's like they've taken an old Roger Moore script and but they've given him like, what if we gave Roger twin machine guns? That doesn't sound like it'll work. Nah, it'll work. And even with Brosnan, it kind of looks ridiculous because he doesn't feel like Bond in this. He just feels like any fucking just SWAT guy who's wandered into a situation.
No, I think you're right. I think that's the problem with it. I think in GoldenEye and perhaps The World Is Not Enough, he feels a bit Bondy. But in this and Die Another Day, he feels odd. An odd fit. It's weird. It's an odd film, but let's get into it. So we start off the terrorist alms bazaar on the Russian border.
Which, isn't it adorable that the people who make this film are under the impression that if you're going to have a terrorist alms bazaar, you've got to do it in secret up a mountain, when, as we know, terrorist arms bazaars, if they actually just happen in like conference centres in central London.
Yeah, it should be Earl's Court.
Yeah, White Knight, we've got you in. You'll be taking the central line. And then you just use your own name, as per usual. They know who you are. You work for us. You work for the British government. And they will give you 10% off and a drink.
He's hiding in the cloakroom. He's in between those coats with a pair of binoculars.
He hasn't even got to be. He'd be like, yeah. He's just, today you're not undercover. You're in. You know, requisitioning.
It would be a bold choice, though, I think, and a celebratory choice, if Bond was just wandering around a conference centre with a pass, and then just speaking into his ear, going, oh, nuclear bomb there.
Just. Have we got one of them? You're wandering around like it's a panini stick. Need one.
But no, he's up a mountain, and it looks like a car boot sale as well, which is disappointing.
It does look like a car boot sale. It's really grotty quality. I can't remember when they said they filmed it, but it was... I thought it must be a set, but it's not particularly. They went properly on location to do this, and somehow they've just made it look like any car boot sale I've ever been to between November and February.
I think it was filmed in Port Talbot.
Was it? Yes. I thought I saw myself in the background there. Well, browsing old copies of Kung Fu magazine.
There is a bloke, if you look in the background, you see Bin Laden running past with a trolley with a couple of nukes in it. On a trolley diash.
And look here. And then just... Tomitronic, yeah, a couple of them things you buy. I got two missiles and a Tomitronic. That's for the kids, you know.
What's that thing called? The track. Big track. I got a big track.
What's the bit? Oh, the chunky, like skeletric thing.
Yeah, well, it's a big track. It was like a giant, I keep saying it's a big track. It was a giant thing, and you could press buttons on the top of it and it would go in those directions.
Oh, yeah.
And it had tank tracks on it.
But it only going that, so it was remote control, but it wasn't remote control.
Yeah, exactly.
You had to be with it to control it.
Exactly. You had to press the arrows to where you wanted it to go.
That, how did that get past the design stage?
I don't know, but they were massive. Everyone had them.
That's because people saw the advert, presumably. You go, no, that's great.
Well, the advert probably made it look like it was like really good.
Well, yeah, probably. But then in reality, even watching the advert, you go, I've got to fucking jog after that now.
Mm. Yeah, this has done nothing for me. You're expecting it to bring you a pint or something. But no, it just sits in the corner and your kid gets fed up with it after a week. And you find it in the loft 10 years later and think, what the fuck did I buy that for?
I never had one, but we weren't allowed toys in my house.
No, of course not.
No.
Because it was Wales.
No, it was my mother's house. Well, weirdly, we were allowed Scud missiles.
Right, cool.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But then, we also got Colin Salmon here with the very unenviable task of just doing non-stop exposition to the point where he gets bored of himself and wanders off halfway through a sentence. But basically, the key fact here is that all the world's terrorists are there to buy weapons, which isn't how it works.
No, I have a feeling that they'd have... It's 1997. They would have been an online thing. You haven't got to wander around.
No.
You can get mail order these days.
Exactly. It's not the fucking Boat of the Year show.
I just come here to network. That's the weird thing. That's I golf what with it everyone
is.
Here. Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. And then minutes later, Bond murders them all. I only came here because I fancied Sharon from Accounts.
Not Accounts, Al-Qaeda. Sorry.
Al-Qaeda, sorry. Yeah.
Sharon from Al-Qaeda.
He was the IT bloke. They're watching all this back on a feed, and Admiral Roebuck is played by Jeffrey Palmer. He says, "Thank you, Emma. I've seen enough. Send in the missile." So the boat, HMS Chester, he rings them on a special red phone.
I just realised, wouldn't it make more sense not to blow them up? But yes. If they know it's happening, wouldn't it make more sense to have, frankly, the Monty Python and the Holy Grail ending, where they just have a bunch of police turn up and go, "See, that's an offensive weapon, that is." And they just arrest everyone and get the intelligence that they probably need to break down the networks in general and not kill a couple of dozen lads.
I think in terms of international things that would be a world news story and probably regretted 20 years later, detonating a terrorist arms bazaar is not a good look.
No.
Mind you, Trump did it, didn't he?
Yeah, it's not a good
look. I mean, they've all done it, haven't they?
They've all done it.
I was just going to say.
We've all done it.
We've all dropped a bomb on a terrorist arms bazaar that later turned out to be a children's party. So he sends the missile, and then White Knight, who's their agent there, he comes on the phone and says, "Hang on, there's something happening." And Colin Salmon's like, "Just get out of there. We're sending a missile." And then he says, "Yes, I can." And Colin Salmon says, "Yes, I can see the plane. What about it?" And the truck reverses and the plane's loaded with nuclear warheads.
Which is
bad. Yeah, because Terence Rigby's there as a Russian admiral, I guess. And he says, "My God." And Jeffrey Palmer says, "I take it that's bad," or something like that. And then Terence Rigby, because he's playing a Russian, he has to say something, make something look like picnic. And he says, "That will make Chernobyl look like picnic."
Well, it wouldn't.
No, it wouldn't.
It would still look like a nuclear meltdown, wouldn't it?
It would.
Not unless it was... Not unless the thing blows up and somehow shoots a bunch of picnic blankets and some fucking lemon cakes or something.
I mean, that would be.
And he goes, now it does kind of look like picnic.
Yeah, I mean, that would be an incredible force of nature to send a living picnic out of explosions.
Yes.
And then the mushroom cloud resembles Yogi Bear, who's come to steal the baskets. I mean, that's just the unpredictability of nuclear energy.
Yeah. This is why it's a mistake. You shouldn't let the genie at the bottle. It makes giant bears.
Well, Chernobyl, isn't that a giant bear, Dan? Isn't it?
In a way. Well, I guess the whole Soviet Union was.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? They love bears there. They hit them with sticks and get them to dance to Agadoo.
I knew half of what you just said was true.
Well, they have dancing bears, don't they? They hit with
sticks. I know, but I'm not sure they go. Were you at one of the gigs?
No.
Do Agadoo.
Like, imagining the bear miming, push pineapple, shake a tree. It'd be quite beautiful. Except they get hit with sticks.
Yeah. They're not. Yeah, but they're still a hell of a showman.
Oh yeah, they are. But there's always a terrible story. It's like Mary Chipperfield, who was like, "Look at what my monkeys can do," and then they went behind the scenes and went, "Yeah, that's because you beat them up." It's not because they want to do that. It's not like Wayne Sleep. Wayne Sleep isn't a ballet dancer because someone gives him a kick in before he goes on stage.
I don't know that, and you don't know that.
That's true. Mr. Blobby tried to.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like Wayne Sleep has been kicked a lot.
I think he probably has. Aren't we all metaphorically, Dan?
What, Wayne Sleep?
Yeah.
In a way, we were all in the Tales of Beatrix Potter. Like this.
Who was he? He was the rat, wasn't he?
I don't know. I assume they doubled up in that because it was like they put a helmet on. Wayne Sleep was everyone in that, for all I know. He lifted himself.
That's true. That was quite a gift.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got one of those, like that film Top Secret, where he's got a really big penis.
I would like to think so.
Kind of tripod himself. Where are we? I can't remember. Oh yeah, so White Knight says we can't send a missile, so Roebuck tries to cancel it, but of course the ship, which by the way has got a key that says peace or war.
Right.
Which I enjoyed.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's on or off.
Yeah, it is on or off. That's exactly what it would be, isn't it? But there's levels between peace and war. Set it to fracas.
That's where they just throw rocks.
Yeah, that's when they just, like, that's when it's just a diplomatic thing and they're just glaring at each other.
Say it till you've been affronted and a little megaphone comes out and goes, you what? You what? What'd you say? And then you get to war where they can actually fire a giant missile.
Yeah. But everything before that is just, just saucy emails. Not saucy emails, just angry emails.
I guess they tried that and then eventually went, we just need on or off, lads.
Yeah, we just need on or off because, honestly, that middle thing that just sends an email that says, as per my previous missing, was not...
I mean, we got into a terrible conflict and we ended up just... We ended up just throwing mud pies at them. And they sunk us with a torpedo, so we need that key just to go one way.
Yeah.
But they press the button to detonate, to destroy the missile. Cancel, I think it says. And it's out of range. They can't do it. So they're all panicking. Ah! And then we cut to a scene of a man smoking. It looks like a big fat doobie, Dan.
Yeah, it looks like... yes, it does. It looks like a big Camberwell carrot.
It's the Camberwell carrot. And he gets it lit by a stranger. And he's about to look up to say thank you. And we get lovely, lovely Pierce, thump him, and then say, filthy habit.
Mm.
Bit smug.
Yeah, well. Did Timothy Dalton smoke his bond?
Oh, yeah, like a chimney.
Did he now?
Oh. Both of his films.
So he's the only one who doesn't... So Pierce Brosnan's the first non-smoking
Bond. That's right.
Bond. Oh, yeah. Lazenby?
Lazenby smoked.
Really?
Yeah.
Jimmy Bond in the thing?
Jimmy Bond in Casino Royale?
Yeah.
That's Woody Allen. He's got a different habit.
Oh, no.
He's got a different filthy habit.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I'm sure David Niven smoked. I mean, that's pretty much what he died of, some sort of throat cancer, didn't he?
Yeah, I know, but that was from something else.
Yeah. We won't go into that.
No.
No. Although he is dead, you can say what you like.
I know, but I was going to bring Michael Douglas into it.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, he got that from Cunnilingus.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He gaslit Catherine Zeta-Jones, didn't he?
Well, he didn't gaslight her. He just... Look, love... I'm sick of you moaning about the fags. Have you considered the possibility it's your minge? Right, that's a bold thing.
I mean, that is essentially the end of King Kong. Yeah. His doctor says to him, was beauty gave you throat cancer? No, it was all those years I smoked fags.
There's not a lot to do on Monkey Island.
Well, as we find out in the grandiose film King Kong Lives, Dan, there's another lady monkey on that island.
I know, where is my copy? I just bought that for us to watch.
Yeah.
Then he would have preferred Cigarette Island.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Where were we? I can't remember where we were.
He's just knocked the fella up for smoking.
That's it, there you go. A bit of a smug ex-smoker, because ex-smokers have that thing where they can say, oh, you smokers disgust me, but as soon as their backs turn, they're like, have you got a spare one?
Necks him and goes, he wouldn't punch him out. He goes, okay, White Knight, what are you doing? Are you stopping the missile? Hang on, give me a minute. Oh,
you would though, wouldn't you? You pick that up and go,
oh, it's a fucking red. It's a red. Oh.
And then that explains his adrenaline-filled murder fest that he goes on in a minute. Yeah. That initial adrenaline buzz he's got from having a fag for the first time in 10 years.
He's just... Yeah, and they're watching the whole thing via satellite. Going, is he shooting them? No, he's just... Somehow he's doing it with his thumb, but they're going... he's doing a Presidio on him, but it's going... It's like it's breaking the skin.
Mm. He's literally firing bullets out of his finger and we don't know how he's doing it.
It's just... But anyway, the point is he needs to stay off the fags.
Yeah, he does. We did well getting him off there. But he starts chucking around square grenades because it's the 90s.
Yeah, and this is the first moment that were problematically production design wise, and this might be a slightly naff film.
Mm. Yeah. But he destroys a machine gun turret, he destroys a jeep, he punches someone, he knocks out the pilot of the plane who, for some reason, is in the back seat.
Having a wank,
that's what it was. Yeah. I mean, why not? You don't want to sit in the front, you might get it all over your HUD. I don't mean Roy Hudd. Roy Hudd is not sat in the front seat going, oh, lay off. You've got it all over my jacket. No, the HUD, the heads-up display, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go in the back seat because it's just going to go over the back of the front seat. That's
exactly.
All right.
It's not going to matter at all, is it?
No, it'll sponge off.
Yeah. If it goes on the windscreen, then it's going to be the HUD. It'll be like, either we're being tailed by a big round plane, or it's a drip.
We're being chased by one really fat plane and six tiny long ones. God, we are so fucking childish. Should not do this podcast when I'm drunk. This is going to get terrible. I've still got a lot of wine to drink. Anyway, this is a little taster of what Dan and I do on a Tuesday night. So Bond gets in that plane and then he uses the guns and the bombs from the plane to just fucking decimate the entire area.
Yeah, it's a full Rambo 2 ending, this.
Total. Oh, yes. Spot on. Yeah, I mean, it's fucking just completely kills everybody in sight. And bearing in mind, these are people who have just come with a contract to buy a bomb.
Yeah, some of these are just like, you know, like the bloke at Harrods. Who's just going to buy next season's things? He's not a terrorist.
No.
These are just people who are just doing a job.
Oh, but there is one terrorist there, though. Gupta.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Played by Ricky Jay, who snuck away with a GPS encoder, which looks like when you buy a necklace for a lady. It's in one of those red boxes that opens and closes. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I know what a box is.
Yeah, sure. just checking. But he is played by Ricky Jay, who is fine. Yeah.
He never really strikes me as an actor, which I know he's not. He's a magician, but he almost feels like a celebrity turn in a non-actor role.
Yeah, he's a bit like if Paul Daniels was in this.
Oh, that's a good bit of casting.
Yeah, although, to be fair, Ricky Jay was very good at what he did.
Has he passed now?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been dead for a few years. But his thing, if you don't know, ladies and gentlemen at home, is he had the amazing ability to use playing cards as a weapon. So there was a deleted scene in this, which I suggest you all check out on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Just when he's telling Carver later on about something that's happened with the encoder. If you look in his left hand, he's holding a pack of playing cards. That's because there was a scene before it to introduce him, where he's literally destroying an office worth of stuff with his cards. He used to be able to get them to stick right into watermelons. It was fucking amazing. He was very good.
Is that how he used to advertise his show, though? Hmm. Ricky Jay, you won't believe what he can stick in a watermelon.
Exactly.
Okay, well, bring the kids.
Yeah, but don't get them to sit in the front row. he's good in Boogie Nights. He's suited to that. And he's the narrator at the beginning of Magnolia, which I really like his voice for that. And he was in Deadwood. But I'm not sure about him in this. It may just be the part. It may not be his fault.
Well, there's a lot of that going around in this film.
There is. And it's an odd director, isn't it?
Roger Spottiswood, who I've just realised sounds like a fake name from another Bond film.
It does. It almost sounds like Lynn Foldswood. Roger Spottiswood, Lynn Foldswood.
What I don't get about him getting the gig is, so you're making a film, you're making an international, $100 million film?
Oh, it probably wasn't that then, was it?
No, but a big budget film for the time.
Equivalents, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a big thing, it's going to be a hit, international spy thriller, exciting, all action. Let's get the guy from Turner and Hooch.
I mean, yeah. Essentially, yeah, that's what happened.
I don't know what else he did. I did Air America, I know that.
I know what else he did. The Arnold Schwarzenegger film, The Ninth Day.
Not The Ninth Day, The Sixth Day.
Is it The Sixth Day? I got it the wrong way around. Yeah, where Arnie is a clone of himself.
Yeah, right.
And it's got the best dummy work I've ever seen in cinema. Brackets the worst.
What is it?
Where a man falls from a high balcony and it's the worst dummy I've ever seen in my life.
Is it worse than The Voodoo Kill Dummies, though?
Maybe.
Really?
I'd have to go back and look at it. But I remember laughing a lot. I think Tony Goldwyn's the baddie.
Tony Goldwyn's... I'm looking at Tony Goldwyn, Michael Rapaport and Robert Duvalny. Now, I've seen that film and formed no memory of it whatsoever.
It's dreadful. The only good bit about it is when Arnie's outside his own house and he sees clone Arnie... It's his birthday, and Clone Army's blowing out the candles, and he says, he's blowing the candles on my birthday cake.
That's the best Arnie impression I've ever heard.
Says, he says, sorry, I beg your pardon, he says, there's a man in my house blowing the candles out on my cake.
That went Clouseau.
It did a bit.
You little fool.
Yeah, but Spottiswood did Turner and Hooch this and the sixth day. So,
right.
What a CV.
Yeah. God. Is he British? I can't remember if he's
yes.
British.
Yes, he is.
So, presumably, he started on Coronation Street or something and then ended up in this situation.
Probably. Without doing any research. Yeah,
oh, my God. Hmm. Oh, you know what? I forgot.
Hmm.
He did Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
There you
the
go.
Fact that he did Tomorrow Never Dies Fuck is fucking me. Insane.
Fuck me. Oh, I mean, they should have got Neil Breen.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, God, I really wanted to do that. Just well, not necessarily in a Bond film, just anything. I just want to find the excuse to give that man $100 million.
We've been saying this for ages, and there should be a hashtag, you know, get Neil Breen $100 million, because...
Yeah.
I want to see. I'd be so interested. Do you remember when KLF just burnt that money?
KLF?
Yeah.
Who's that?
They were a band. They had £1 million in cash and they burnt it.
No. Why did they do that?
As a kind of we don't need money stunt.
Where are they now? Because I've never heard of them.
Oh, you've never heard of the KLF?
No.
They did that song, you know, the KLF. Uh-huh.
Now, bear in mind...
You are going to get so many tweets saying, I can't believe you haven't heard of the KLF.
All right. You know what? I'm used to this because I had a very sheltered childhood.
You did.
Right? We weren't... Also, a lot of modern music didn't make it past Bristol.
Hmm.
But there's that. But also, a few years ago, had never heard of Madonna's Vogue, and I didn't know what it was.
Oh, my God.
And my wife went mad at me, and all her friends to this day make fun of me.
I'm not surprised.
It's fine. We weren't allowed popular music in the house, so there are massive gaps. The only, up until 1996, the only modern music we had in the house was a copy that my sister had stolen and snuck into the house of Aswad's Shine.
Jesus Christ, are you like that? There was that film where the children were kept in the dark for years and then in the end they're let into the sunlight.
Yeah. But,
was it that?
Yeah, it was exactly like that, except we had, instead of sunlight, it was Aswad's Shine.
I remember watching that film where the kids are kept in the dark and then let into the sunlight. Someone will tell me what it is, by the way. And I was very little and I cried at the end when they came out. And I remember my brother laughing at me and then telling all my friends that I cried at a film where children got let into the sunlight.
See, that sounds... Basically, that is what happened to me, right? Mm. She just didn't have it in the house.
But it was Aswad.
But it was Aswad's Shine.
Yeah.
We had Aswad Shine, and the other one, a few years later, someone gave me a dance remix of the Jurassic Park theme tune, and that was the only two pieces, genuinely, those are the only two pieces of modern music that were that I really heard until I moved out.
So you grew up in East Germany?
East Swansea.
In Swansea, same thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, the KLF burned $1 million. I think we should raise $100 million and just give it to Neil Breen.
Yeah.
Hmm. See what he does with it.
He'll give it to KLF, probably, knowing him. He's a twat.
Probably would. Probably give it to EMF.
But I should
mention as well, the bassist of EMF listens to this podcast and he likes it very much. So if you're listening, thank you very much.
Hello.
Hmm.
I wasn't allowed your music.
Why weren't you allowed EMF?
Well, because they weren't Aswad.
Because they weren't Aswad. You're not listening to that. It's not Aswad. Stevie Marsh is his name. So hello, Stevie. Thanks for your message.
Hello. Yeah. I should get in this. I'm always happy to learn new bands that I should have known for decades.
New bands of the EMF. That's... When did Unbelievable come out? Like 1989?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't have been allowed.
No.
She wouldn't have... Honestly, the only thing... Right now, I'm looking at a vinyl collection that I had growing up. And there's Tom Lehrer.
Right.
Are you familiar with Tom Lehrer?
Never heard of him.
Satirical singer from the 60s and the 50s, so tons of that.
Yeah,
and then some Hancocks, and then some classical albums. So I've got my mother let us listen to the score from Ben-Hur, and that's about it.
Bloody hell!
Yeah, it's a pretty good score.
This is turning into therapy.
No. It's too late for that.
Hi there. I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries, and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Where did we get to?
Well, my childhood.
Apart from that.
We got to... he hasn't even blown up the... He's just blown up the bazaar. He's being chased by a plane.
He's in the plane, yeah. Another plane's chasing him as he takes off because the missile's like seconds away from landing and detonating. Yeah. And then we get the oh my God, James Bond's going to die situation where there's a huge wall of flame. His plane comes out at the last second.
I forgot you did the Foley on this film.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And he's driving away in his plane. He's driving, I don't know. And the other plane...
Sailing,
thank you. Sorry, everybody. But the pilot who's having a wank in the back seat wakes up and throws the cord around his neck and starts throttling him.
Yeah, with a rolled-up sock he was about to use, yeah. And he starts throttling him. And Pierce Brosnan does his patented choke acting.
Yes.
Where he every time he gets choked, it's the same look. And so he is being throttled by a Russian in this. And it's the exact same acting he does when he is in Mrs. Doubtfire and he's accidentally eating some KN.
Yes, you're right, because he's allergic to it.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. He's doing proper... Yeah. But luckily for him, he's managed to dodge some heat-seeking missiles by... using the joystick with his legs.
Yeah.
But luckily, he's ended up below the plane that's chasing him. So he has a great idea, Dan.
Oh, no, he doesn't, does he?
He does. Well, he launches the...
Ejector
seat of the back seat guy into the plane above.
Yeah. And then the plane explodes.
How does it explode? I'm guessing the guy in the back seat... right. I don't know why you're laughing. It's not like we've recorded this once already. The guy in the back seat, I think, he's not into your autoerotic asphyxiation. No, no. He likes to masturbate with a live hand grenade in his left hand. What is that? Is that not the ultimate risk?
Well, so you've got to finish before the grenade goes off.
Or, like, if you slightly let go, it'll go off. So you've got to keep that clutched the whole time.
So, yeah. I think it's the come in that makes you relaxed, isn't it?
Exactly, so that's really, the risk.
You want to edge for as long as you can.
That's it. But while also holding this grenade.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened is he's got discombobulated because he's got sent into the plane above, which genuinely, I spoke to an engineer on Skype, and he assured me that would definitely happen.
So if you get launched into a plane, first of all, if you are able to launch,
he didn't even question the Skype, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, Karen.
No,
it would be Zoom, of course. But sorry,
of course, yes,
yeah.
The other video conferencing software is available.
But no one uses it. Yeah,
but no fucking uses it. You wouldn't like. Basically, all a human is a piece of beef in this occasion with a grenade in one hand and his cock in the other.
But he
somehow shoots through the bottom of the plane.
Yeah,
which wouldn't happen. He would just splatter on the underneath.
Yeah,
and the plane pilot who he's crashed into, he wouldn't even know he'd been hit by him.
No, he wouldn't.
He'd be like, he'd lose James Bond. He'd just go back to base and goes, "The fuck is that underneath here?"
You know how many seagulls and birds they probably hit a day.
Exactly. Yeah. And a bird shit on the roof, and I don't know, and an outline of a man with his cock out underneath.
I'd love it if it was a cartoon Wile E. Coyote outline of a man with his knob out.
Yeah, with just a complete throbber. Right. Pressure wash that.
Thinking about squirrels.
Holding a little sign saying, uh-oh.
But no, no, what happens, Dan, actually, according to my engineer, which, by the way, brackets, I didn't speak to in case anyone is genuinely believing that happened. Yeah, he goes right into the back seat and explodes, and the plane explodes.
Yeah.
And Pierce gets to turn around, considering... Now, I might be wrong about this, but I assume when you eject the back seat, the cockpit lid... I say lid because I was in the Navy. goes off the top of the plane, surely. So if Pierce is sitting in the front seat and he says backseat driver, as is his joke, it would be like this. Because the wind would be rustling through the thousands of miles an hour.
Yeah. And he'd be depressurised and he'd...
When he's got his little mask on.
He's got his little mask on, that's true, but he'd still get sucked out.
Not for the first time. That's what he would say if that happened before he died.
Yeah, but he went, oh, not for the first time. Why? And then, like, the black box is just recording. Going, why is he bothering?
Black box is back there going, right on time.
I get that reference.
Thank you. See, that managed to make its way to East Swansea.
Yeah.
But then he has to sort of be a bit sassy and go back to HQ because they all think he's died because obviously the video feed cut out when the missile dropped. And he says, White Knight to Rook, where does the Admiral want his missiles delivered? And Geoffrey Palmer's like, oh, you bastard.
Actually, that's a really good point. Where are you supposed to land us?
Yeah, where's he going to go? Presumably to a British army base on Gibraltar.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. Just like Amazon Prime, I mean, same day.
We're on the Russian border, so where would they land? Germany, perhaps?
Oh, yeah, I guess there's places you can go with it. That was fine, yeah.
That's the least of the problems in this film, really.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But as his jet does a last burst of flame, we get the opening credits. Daniel Kleiman with his second go after GoldenEye, which was a success, because obviously Morris Binder, he died after License to Kill. So we get Daniel Kleiman, who also directed Smashy and Nicey, End of an Era.
What, the whole episode?
The whole film, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Weird switch of gigs.
I know.
Because you don't look at these and go, oh, that guy should do comedy.
No. But this one's got like nudie ladies and X-ray, a gun being loaded in an X-ray. And the Sheryl Crow song. What do you think of the Sheryl Crow song?
It's fine. Let's be honest, a lot of Bond themes are quite bland.
Yeah.
Like, they work in the context of the film. They've got to have a certain quality because they're a Bond theme, but you wouldn't necessarily listen to it in the context of not being a Bond theme.
I liked it at the time. I remember buying it as a single.
Right.
Because I kind of always did that with Bond songs. Always got caught up in it. But I always felt that it's like that bit in Alan Partridge where the woman behind the desk sings, and he's like, stop it, you can't sing. It's a bit like that listening to her song, because the chorus, she has to really shriek. And I feel like she only gets about 70% there. But originally, David Arnold, who did the score to this. By the way, this has got my favourite gun barrel, just for the record.
Why is that?
It's just really sexy and shiny, which I like. Pierce looks good, and Arnold's cue is perfect.
Is it different? Did he do it four times then? Did he do a different gun barrel every time?
He did.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, he didn't do GoldenEye, obviously. A French guy did GoldenEye. The guy did the score to Leon.
Yeah.
Whose name has escaped me.
Oh, you know, it's just killing me. Oh, Christ.
I'm going to have to look it up, aren't I?
But it is cheating. Because the thing is, I don't dislike his music. I just didn't like it in a Bond film.
No, I like elements of it. I really like the kind of... the kind of rusted metal, dead, Cold War thing it conjures up.
It's Eric Serra.
There we go, Eric Serra. So David Arnold did Tomorrow Never Dies, World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day, Casino Royale, and Quantum of Solace.
Right.
Which are all very good scores. But Die Another World Is Not Enough has a bit of a trip-hoppy thing going behind it in the opening titles, and Die Another Day... Oh, no, Die Another Day has got the trip-hoppy thing. But it's also got the bullet coming right down the gun barrel towards the audience, which is horrible. But that's not his fault. But anyway, David Arnold in this, he wanted K.D. Lang with a song called Surrender, which is the motif all the way through this, which then pays off in the end credits. But I guess they wanted a, they always want a name, don't they? I mean, if you notice from the last few, you've got Adele, Sam Smith, and now Billy Eyelashes.
Which maybe I haven't heard that yet. I know it won a Grammy or something.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's just, I probably shouldn't talk about it here. I'll wait till I do No Time to Die whenever that comes out. You know, we're all 70 years old. So after the end credits, the opening credits, sorry, we get the boring bit that's just hard to watch because it's so dull, where the HMS Devonshire is sent into Chinese occupied waters by Gupta's GPS encoder that he bought at the bazaar. And so some MiGs come over to them and say, hey, you're in our waters. And the Devonshire's like, well, we're not, because we're looking at our computer that's set to peace. Give peace a chance. That we're not. And then the MiGs are like, well, you are. And then, but secretly in the waters around them is a stealth boat, Dan, which Donald Trump would think would mean it is invisible.
Yes, as opposed to what it is, which is massively big and seeable.
Yeah, but it just doesn't show up on radar. Yeah. But the stealth boat sends a torpedo with a drill on it into the Devonshire to make it feel like someone else is doing it. It's effectively a left-handed wanker.
You know, if you put all your weight on the stealth boat, it can feel like someone else is shooting your missile.
Someone told me once that I used to work with in an office, and you always meet people like this as an office, in an office, that if there was something called the navel as a wank, which is where you lie on your left hand until you lose feeling.
Yeah.
Then you paint your fingernails.
Yeah.
And then you poke it through a curtain to make it look like someone else is doing it.
I mean, it's a lot. I knew the first two bits. I've never heard of you. And then, so you get out of bed and you go stand by the curtain.
No, because you're in bed, because naval beds have got a curtain across them.
I see what you mean.
So you can put your arm out and feed it back in through the gap.
Yeah. The thing about that is, you know you've done that.
Exactly, yeah. That's where it falls down, really.
Would be amazing if one time you're doing it, and then halfway through you realise, hang on, I'm holding a book with two hands here. What's happening? I don't remember starting this wank now I think about it.
I was asleep, wasn't I?
And you open the curtains and it's...
Brian Blessed.
Brian Blessed.
Come for me!
Do you mind leaning on my left arm?
Yeah, but someone told me that. And I just think, as you say, I think that's a bit elaborate. And I think that that desperate plunge you have after you've ejaculated, your world would fall apart from the elaboracy of what you've just done. Yeah. Anyway, we're going all over the place this evening. So the torpedo goes in, and then what they also do is they fire a missile onto the MiGs as well. So it looks like they've interacted in a kind of war situation.
Yeah.
And then there's loads of survivors from the Devonshire, one of whom, before it sinks, is Gerard Butler. Yeah.
Gerald Butler.
Looks like Gerald Butler. Hello.
And also, I don't know, I've probably mentioned this before, I had relatives who used to get film star names almost right. I like this, so it's got Gary Grant in it. Is it?
It must be like when you're at Michael Douglas's wedding. This is Gerald Butler. it's Gerard Butler, actually.
All right, sit down, fucking mouthy. Guys.
Also, one of them is Julian Rintut. Is it Julian Rintut?
Yeah. He's got a bit more of a moment in it. Who's the actual... I guess he's the captain or the second in command, but the guy...
Yeah, I don't know.
Because this was a trope for years. Every time they cut the inside of a British military vessel, the captain or second in command always looked like someone who would have auditioned for Bond 6 or 7 years earlier.
Yeah.
In fact, specifically like George Baker when he did it, because he was supposed to be Bond at one point. But anyway.
Yeah, but obviously all the survivors in the water swim up to the stealth boat because it's nearby where they were. And this is where we meet Stamper. who's like Ivan Drago if he joined Blur. Because he's always got these like kind of like 90s polo neck shirts on.
Yeah, like he looks like a shambles now, but back then he was what I feel like every... Like, if you were in a club on the pull and a bloke looked like Stamper walked in, you'd be like, might as well go home.
Yeah, well, no, I was just going to say, if you were in a club in during this time and Stamper came in, he would definitely try and sell you pills.
But yes, yeah. Or he was already DJing there.
Yeah, exactly. One of the three, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's like Carver's number. He's like Carver's henchman, essentially.
Yeah, we're going to get to this because I have some thoughts on this.
So
he's a prick, I'll tell you that for a start.
Oh, he's a prick, yeah.
Because he keeps making, as the missile's going through the chewy like missile thing that's chewing its way through the boat, he's doing a little commentary. He's like, now they're wondering, why hasn't the missile blown up yet? Mm. And it's like, who's he talking to? Because the bloke who's next to him works on the stealth boat, he knows what the plan is. He's like, who are you talking to? I mean, who is this for? Yes, I'll have some pills, but...
Probably doesn't want to say too much because he's banging his missus.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Or he's DJing that night and he doesn't want to upset it because he's promised he'll play the Grease Mega Mix as an opening.
Oh, God, I
Grease
remember
Grease Lightning.
What a time to be alive, that was.
Awful. It was a kind of time where you'd wait for the top 40 on a Sunday and number one, you'd always be like, what? Freddie Mercury, Living on Me Own, number one for the 10th week in a row.
Oh, God.
Egon Roney, I ain't got no time for no risky business.
Wait, Egon Roney?
He doesn't say that, but I always thought he did. So then, as you say, he's giving a commentary, and then doesn't he even say knock knock or something?
Yeah, he says knock knock, something like that. Oh, God. He's bad.
Yeah, and then he machine guns all the survivors in the water with a gun, with a massive machine gun, which we know later on is loaded with Chinese bullets.
Yeah.
Which we won't get into that because that just sounds racist. But then he goes back on a telly and he's speaking to the silhouette of a man on a telly. And he says, everything's done. And then he says, I haven't seen the footage myself, but I'm told it's exquisite or something like that.
Oh, God. Oh, the footage of the guys getting shot in the water.
Yeah.
He goes, that's really good. It's choreographed. You know those old MGM water ballet things? It's like that, but with guts.
We gunned them all down. Yeah. Just as they were getting to the peak of it. Yeah. So then the person he's talking to turns off the TV, turns around and then goes out and we meet Elliot Carver. Played by Jonathan Pryce, who is fucking awful.
Yeah, he really is.
And I love Jonathan Pryce.
Not everyone gets one, but he's one of those great actors that, because this is the only bad performance he's ever given, and it is a bad performance.
Because it was supposed to be Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
But there was a writer's strike, and it was chaos on set, and apparently when Hopkins went on, he was actually on set for a day, I think. And he was so mad in terms of the script changing every 5 minutes. He said, this isn't for me.
Wow.
So he left. So they got, I don't know what the casting process was, but they eventually settled on Jonathan Pryce, who on paper you'd think would make a great Bond villain.
But he's, and he still could. That's the thing. He wasn't good for his part. And I guess we'll be talking quite a lot, but this guy is a fucking nutter. He's a full-blown nutbar. Right, and they keep, and for some, so they've gone with Anthony Hopkins, they've gone with this guy, and I don't know why they kept thinking, oh, this is a role for an RSC person. This person is genuinely insane. Right, and I mentioned before we were recording, I have an idea genuinely of who I think would have been a really interesting
go on, because I've been waiting for this for days.
Okay, right. Just let it sink in first, right? And I mean this since I'm not, this isn't a bit, I genuinely think this is, would have been the way to go.
Okay,
to play Elliot Carver, Barry Humphreys.
I can see it because you're doing a Murdoch thing.
You're doing a Murdoch thing. Yeah. And also, he had, I think, it would be menacing in a way that he's not, because Pryce is playing him as weirdly, soft-spoken. I think at the time I saw an interview, going, well, people say you're doing it a little bit camp, and that's just the way I do it, darling. And it was like, but he shouldn't be. This guy's a sociopath. You have a really... It should have been a comic play.
Barry Humphries does... Have you seen Bedazzled?
Yeah.
I think he... Does he play Lust? No, Raquel Welch is Lust.
He's... I can't remember, but he's...
He's one of the sins.
Yeah.
And he plays it very sort of camp, but very sort of evil.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad shout.
And I think, and you could just have him doing his impression of, God, what was the, not obviously not Dim Edna, the other one?
Barry, the husband, Les Patterson.
Les Patterson, have a version of Les Patterson. Mm. You don't want that guy with his finger on the button.
No. You're on a hiding to nothing though, aren't you? Because the comparisons are Murdoch, and that's it.
So, at the time, yeah.
Yeah, so how do you really square that circle? Because unless it's Murdoch, it's not really going to work, because Jonathan Pryce, the way he plays it, and I love Jonathan Pryce and a lot of things, but his choice here is just too piss weak.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't think he's at all menacing or scary.
No.
His power, I mean, he's lucky he's got Stamper, because although I don't think he's particularly great either, he's a bit more menacing than... Carver.
Yeah.
And he's just embarrassing in this. He's really, it feels like he's really in at the deep end and he can't swim.
He's not helped by a terrible script. It's a terrible script, not just awful, the dialogue.
Awful, yeah.
I mean, his dialogue is particularly bad. But also,
that's what I mean.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, why? So he, when we first meet him, he's writing the headline of the next day's newspaper. Well, why is he's the head of a multinational corporation? He can't be doing this in the middle of the night.
No.
And there's nobody else in the office. It's just... I've been in newspaper offices in the middle of the night. They're still quite busy, right? And he's there on his own, and he's writing the thing, going, Stamper, I need to know how many soldiers were shot. I need it for my headline. And make it quick, because I've also got the Sudoku to do, and I've got a winter skincare do's and don'ts for Sunday supplements, so fucking hurry up.
Right? I've also got that fucking pad. Drives me insane. Tap, 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 tap. Fuck you. Fuck you so much. And we get him talking to his various sort of, you know, guys from all around the world and all the news offices, one of whom is the producer, Michael G. Wilson, who says...
Yeah, who's possibly as bad as... as
the he did it as the horrible line, consider him slimed.
Yeah.
You get a Bill Gates joke and a Bill Clinton joke in this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About how the software we've told them to download will need an up, will need to be rebought again in a year or something.
Yeah, it feels like even then, at 97, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, this is heavy-handed.
And then you get the bit about the cheerleader with the president, which is obviously a Monica Lewinsky reference. Obviously, she wasn't a cheerleader, but we're saying that the president's a shagger.
Yeah.
Again, as you say, it's heavy-handed. And then he speaks to Stamper, and then he comes back and he says, what does he call them? My birds of twat or something.
My birds of twat?
Something like that. Something like that. He says, breaking news. There seems to be a bit of something boiling in the China Seas.
Oh. Yeah, something like that. Storms are brewing in the China Seas. Oh. And he gives a speech, I want books, radio, film.
Books! He wants them to write a book overnight.
Yeah. And Stamper's got a lot to do. Because as we figure out, I was thinking about the timeline of this. This is the busiest day anyone's ever had in a film, is Stamper's day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's like he's all over the place.
He's like, so let me just see. You want me to fact check your newspaper? You want me to write a book about what just happened and a radio play? It's insane. He gives a nonsense speech. It's weird. So this is written by people who literally work in the media, who don't seem to know how the media works.
I think it's probably written by somebody who wasn't a writer, because there was a writer's strike on.
Well, yeah, what was that situation? Hang on, I'm going to look up, because I have no idea who wrote this one.
I can't remember who wrote it. But there was a writer's strike, hence the chaos of the production. Yeah. And so I think they got the script in at the 11th hour, and then obviously were just... tampering with it all along, but the writers weren't allowed to be there to do it.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
So the same thing happened with Quantum of Solace, where you hear the stories about Daniel Craig and Mark Foster in a trailer literally typing it up themselves, any changes they've made.
Right.
The writers are Bruce Feirstein, officially. Oh no, it is just Bruce Feirstein. But I reckon IMDb gives the credit as Bruce Feirstein and Ian Fleming. No, it's Bruce Feirstein. So, but I reckon there were probably loads of people behind the scenes just punching up stuff and helping, but maybe unofficially. I mean, maybe Michael G. Wilson had a go because he had to handle a lot of Bond scripts previously. But oh yeah, it's dreadful, dreadful dialogue, and you're so sick of him as soon as you see him.
Yeah, like sometimes, most of the time in a Bond film, it's like that's the really bits you look forward to. Bond versus the guy. It's like, oh, just leave him in his fucking trailer for this one.
Yeah, he's dreadful. But then we get the British Ministry of Defence, played by Julian Fellowes.
Pre-fame.
Pre-fame, before he decided, before he carved out a niche of writing about posh people.
Yeah.
He's meeting with Roebuck and M about this particular incident. And they say, they're like, oh, M's saying we should have, you know, a period of investigation before we go, because Roebuck's big into, let's send in the fleet.
Mm.
And M's like, no, no, man, you know. And then Moneypenny calls Bond, who's in Oxford, having it off with Brian Adams' wife or girlfriend.
Is that Brian Adams' wife?
Or girlfriend at the time, yeah.
Oh, well done.
She
well
was
done.
A Swedish model, I believe.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm. Because he's talking...
You see quite a lot of her ass.
Danish. Bond, Danish, I beg your pardon.
She's Danish, which I know she's Danish in the thing, because he does, I'm just brushing up on a little Danish. Mm. He's fucking a pastry.
Yeah.
And
you do see her ass, you're right.
You just see quite a lot of her ass in this. For a Bond film, it's quite a lot of ass. Which is fine. I'm not against it.
And Moneypenny gets to do that joke that everyone was doing in the 90s about being a cunning linguist.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. And then she hangs up the phone, and M's there, and M says, and then she says to him, "Don't ask." And M says, "Don't tell."
And then she's like, "Yeah, he's fucking a pastry."
He's having it off with a fucking pastry.
Yeah.
We're paying him, and he's wanking into a pastry.
That's a fucking. He calls it the cinema swirl, he does.
Well, it's got a hole in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he has to come back, and he comes back, and he, when they're all arguing about what they're going to do, Bond walks in and says, "By the way, here's the latest issue of Carver's paper, which is called Tomorrow," which is the most awful name you can come up with for a newspaper.
Yes, all right, I'll go along with that. Yeah, I mean, there's probably worse ones.
Hmm. But Tomorrow, you wouldn't buy a newspaper today that's called Tomorrow.
No, you'd want earlier today or yesterday.
Hmm. And this film was originally called Tomorrow Never Lies.
Oh, okay.
Which is, again, which is worse, by the way.
Yeah.
Because Tomorrow Never Dies is the title. We need to talk about this. Has no relevance to this film.
No, no. Doesn't make any sense.
No. Because even if you take into effect that the newspaper's called Tomorrow, you're saying that it's immortal.
Yes, and the thing is, I mean, it disproves, because I'm assuming at the end of the film, after he's killed the managing editor and Sudoku guy and witness King Kerdus and Dodge Block, that the newspaper probably doesn't go after this film. So Tomorrow lasts about an hour and 50.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense as a title. But there we go. So he comes in and he says, this is in the newspaper about this conflict, but it also mentions how many people were killed and what ammunition was used to kill them. And then Julian Fellowes says to Jeffrey Palmer, did you leak this? And Palmer goes, no, it's the first I've heard of it. Which is when they should all stop and go, well, Elliot Carver's done this,
he definitely did it then. That's exactly. Because it is so incredibly obvious. Well, we better go and check. But, you know, if you've got 48 hours, otherwise we're just going to blow up the Chinese. Or you could not do that because he definitely done it.
Yeah, because he knows all the information about what's happened. But that's how we leave it, as you say. Julian Fellowes says, send in the fleet. M, you've got 48 hours to investigate. So when they're leaving in the car, M says to Bond, well, we know because the GPS signal came from a Carver satellite.
Yeah, it's starting to mount up the evidence here, isn't it?
Yeah, but she says, basically, we need more proof.
No, you don't.
You don't. I mean, you've got enough there.
Honestly.
To start an actual investigation.
You could send Roger Cook in at this point, right?
You could send fucking Rylan, where his name is. Rylan. You could send Rylan in. I don't know why I said Rylan. Sorry about that, everybody. I'm drunk. But so he's in the car with M, and she says, well, we need you. We know that Carver is married to a woman that you used to go out with.
Yeah, but most people are, innit? And he winks.
Yeah, innit? And she says, we want you to pump her for information.
And yeah, and then Moneypenny turns around and says, with your cock, like. Yeah. Or something like that. Something like that.
It depends how much pumping is necessary, James. And he comes back with a retort, which is shit, and it always bothers me. If only the same were true of you, Moneypenny.
What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything.
The thing is, what is he being... What do we reckon they have fucked?
Well, no.
Oh, it's unrequited, is it?
Mm.
Yeah. But both of them are up for it.
Yeah, because in Die Another Day, the last thing you see of Moneypenny is her wanking to images of... to a virtual reality film of her having off with Bond. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's unrequited. I've always said that Moneypenny is the woman who works behind the desk at an impotence clinic. She you know, she gives him encouragement, but we'll never go there.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So he has to go to Hamburg to investigate and speak to Paris Carver, who's Elliot's wife. So he goes to Hamburg, and when he lands at the airport, he meets Q. Mm. Who, this point, looks like he's fucking Jim Henson puppet.
He looks so bad.
He looks like Hoggle from The Labyrinth.
He does. Mm. I have... bless him.
Mm.
Bless him and everything. But he was... And I'm glad he was still getting some work. But he was like... He was late 80s at this point? Mid 80s at this point?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It had become that point. Was, you know when... you know the year Muhammad Ali turned up at the Oscars?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yay! And then they're like, oh, sad, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that, but every 2 years with Desmond Llewellyn.
Definitely, definitely. It's like when they bring a whale out, a killer whale out of SeaWorld. Yay! Oh, it's Finn's really fucking floppy. It looks really miserable.
I think he's got milky eyes. I mean, you know, whales can get milky eyes. It's very sad, but the thing that is sadder, and I know this is your feeling about this as well, is the thing that is sadder and old man-ish than Q in this is the car that Q then gives to Bond.
Fuck's sake.
Which is a granddad's car.
It's a fucking businessman's business car. Bond has had, up to this point, he's had a Bentley. Then he had to turn that in for an Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Then he had a Lotus Esprit.
Yeah.
Then he had the sexiest Aston Martins again. And now they did this deal with BMW, which was a dreadful idea.
Yeah, he looks like he's gone from Aston Martin DB7 to a thing that looks like a manager a Nat West would drive.
Yes. It's so boring to look at.
Yeah, you take away the remote control and this car is nothing.
Absolutely. It doesn't do anything. I mean, as it turns out, it does, but...
Yeah, you know, but it looks like something Partridge would drive.
Exactly, it's I'd so love if boring.
In the next film, Bond pulls up and it just says, cock piss Bond on the side.
Or James Bond drives a BMW. But yeah. And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirchpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two. So please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like. And, you know, why not even buy Thunderbug? Hey, why not? See you next time.
Tomorrow never dies, so live for today. Don't be afraid of the skeletons of yesterday. Each morning brings you closer to your goal. So crack a chance, don't let it go. City streets are littered with the casualties, the could-haves and the should-haves and the would-have-beens. Don't let your chance slip by, because there are those who will teach you.
Hi, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.